Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
11.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where?
To 11.
11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
We talked Bears football to start. We are surmising the demise of a Packers dynasty. Certainly a coach that allowed a game to slip away from him and put it right in the hands of the opposing team to take from him. And what it may say about where this division is, and it casts into fine focus what is at stake between the Bears and the Vikings as they battle for supremacy of a division. Where they once were had to deal with the hegemon of the Packers, that is the case no longer. And this is it just throws another bit of context on an enormous Bears game Sunday night.
Oh, we also talked a little bit of Cubs news. Remember, you broke just a tiny bit there.
It's not a huge deal. And really,
it matters.
It's no surprise that among the teams that are in at this moment, listening to what's going on with Bryce Harper, the Cubs have yet to say that they're not interested. They are one of those teams that is monitoring everything. They are part of it. And, of course, people on Twitter are assuming that that means Bryce Harper is coming to the Cubs.
Well, yeah, that's what Twitter's for.
No, that's not.
Assuming.
It's just the fact that they're interested in being apprised of everything that goes on at this point. We also talk Notre Dame with Pete Sampson and talk college football with Pete Futek.
There's your swoosh. I wasn't watching last night as Houston beat Tulane and beat them soundly. I don't know if you caught any of the game, but there's been quite the controversy over Ed Oliver and his head coach, Major Applewhite, the former Texas quarterback. Have you read or seen anything about this? Ed Oliver, remember, when we talked with Pete Futek early in the season, we talked Matt Miller early in the season, Ed Oliver was as good a college football prospect for the NFL as there is in college football. Mm-hmm. He hasn't played the last couple of games because of a knee injury.
And before the year started, that was, you know, Matt Miller was just gushing over
Ed
Oliver.
And will continue to gush. I mean, he's still going to be on the big board, but he hasn't played the last four games, not Miller, Oliver, because of a knee issue. So last night, apparently, I believe I have the facts straight, but it's about a 50-degree night as Houston takes on Tulane. There are coats for players who are playing to keep warm. You know, the big coats that go over the, you know, over the pads and everything. Oliver was wearing a coat. He wasn't playing. He wasn't in pads. Major Applewhite, his head coach, says coats are only for guys who are playing. Coffee is for closers.
What?
So he told him to put the coffee down. He took the coat.
It would be harder to stay warm if you're not playing.
He took the coat from Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver got into it with Major Applewhite. There was a sideline confrontation. The argument got heated. They had to be restrained and separated by whether it's a Houston staffer or an assistant coach or something like that. The quote from the Houston Chronicle from Applewhite is this: "There's a rule for our team. Everybody follows the rule. I want everybody to follow the rule. I asked him to follow the rule. He was upset about it, and I get it. We deal with these types of situations all the time. This is something we're going to learn from and grow from." On the one hand, listen.
Why draw the line?
He's got a rule. It doesn't matter why he's drawn the rule. He's got a rule. And how would you look as a college football coach if you're looking at Ed Oliver and thinking, this guy's going pro. He's not coming back. He's already declared that. How would it look to the rest of these guys as I try and build this program if I let Ed Oliver just do whatever he wants and wear this coat? On the other hand, get more coats. You're a college football
player. Wait, so it's like, because they don't have enough coats?
I don't know.
Or it's just some stupid rule.
I don't know who sets it. It's both. It's probably both. They set the number of coats for the number of players with pads, and it's a stupid rule, yeah. But enforcing a stupid rule doesn't make that decision necessarily stupid in the grand context of college football, which is inherently stupid. The whole thing makes my brain hurt. But the fact that you've got a top prospect, this kid is going to go to the combine, Ed Oliver, and the first question he's going to be asked in each one of his individual meetings with every one
right.
of those coaches or
draft picks yep.
or whatever, they're all going to say, Ed, we love you. What the hell happened against Tulane?
Need Tony Medlin in the coat drive.
What?
Get Ed Oliver a coat. Put your hands on the radio.
Roy Clark died, and I don't care. He was 85, and I thought he'd been dead for 20 years. I never really... Hee-Haw debuted the year I was born. It debuted in 1969.
I've never seen Hee-Haw. I've heard of it.
I've never seen Hee-Haw. I mean, I've probably like flipped channels past it.
I understand the cultural significance.
I've never stopped on Hee-Haw.
No.
Whether it's Junior Samples or Minnie Pearl or anybody else that was important on that show.
Hee-Haw was a big part of my Virginia childhood.
Your what?
I lived in
what?
Virginia for 2 years, and Hee-Haw was a staple in the Zawoski household.
Was it forced upon you by state law in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, was it,
it was on every channel.
They thought it was a biopic.
But is it?
It's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah, I know what it is. It's a variety show with cornpone humor celebrating rural life.
Correct.
But Roy Clark was also believed to be a virtuoso country guitarist. And I just thought that he was way older. So he was in his 30s when he started on Hee-Haw. When I thought he was in his 50s.
It's another one of those guys who was always 55 in his life?
Correct. Now, so that's fine. I don't really care, as I thought he's been dead forever. However, I am sad to hear about William Goldman, the screenwriter who died last night at age 87. And if you don't think you know William Goldman, believe me. This guy, he wrote All the President's Men. He won the screenwriting Oscar for that. He wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He won the Oscar for that as well. He wrote the book and then the screenplay of Princess Bride.
Anybody want a peanut?
Everybody wants a peanut.
He wrote Marathon Man. Is it safe? I mean, there are lines in our lexicon. If you think about these movies, All the President's Men with Follow the Money, Is It Safe?
Those are his.
As You Wish. This is William Goldman. The Stepford Wives, The Great Waldo Pepper, A Bridge Too Far, Chaplin. He also wrote the screenplay for Misery,
wow.
based on the Stephen King book. He did a lot of uncredited script doctoring, including for Indecent Proposal and A Few Good Men. There's also a lot of stories here being told. Apparently, Jonathan Demme completely changed the edit of Silence of the Lambs based on a suggestion that William Goldman made when he didn't even know that William Goldman was part of a closed and private screening. William Goldman called Jonathan Demme and said, I have an idea for you that I think is going to tighten up this movie. Get rid of this scene, get rid of this scene, get rid of this scene. They did it. They watch it. They said he was right.
Wow.
I mean, really. And I'm not going to hold it against William Goldman that he went to Camp Debagamon, which is the rival of North Star Camp.
That was your evil Camp Tiger Claw?
Still is.
The anonymously
still
evil campers from across the lake?
By Camp Meat to this day. It's still, with the demise of Jack Pine, it is now just Nabagamon versus North Star.
Jack Pine.
Well, of course, Jack Pine.
So I went through an adventure last night, another homeowner's adventure. I said homeowner's.
Solar homeowner's adventure. You could be a solar homeowner.
I am a solo homeowner.
Yes. Not a solar solo homeowner.
I shouldn't try and say any of those words again. I'm going to screw them all up. I went and tried to do my own plumbing work, which, you know how everyone tells you to not do your own plumbing or electrical work? You should probably listen to them. Although, here's my question. I wonder if I can call this a success, even though I haven't yet fixed the problem. I have a leak in the sink. I found out, I believe, where the leak actually is, prior to, I wasn't quite sure. I didn't get hurt. I bought a specialized tool that's not just a unitasker. It's one of those wrenches that it's like a vertical wrench, right? You can bend the top either way, so you can unscrew something that is it's straight up from you.
Oh.
You know, like if you have to lay down.
Yeah.
And your back's underneath.
So you can't get perpendicular, right?
Because your wrench doesn't allow you to get in there. I'm sure it's got a name. I don't know what the hell it is. But I bought a specialized tool.
It's not an Allen wrench.
That will also do something else. It's not just for this task, but it is made for that task. So I feel good about, you know, dropping $12 on something that could be used for something else. I didn't bleed. I didn't bruise. I didn't hurt myself otherwise.
That's a win.
And I think that I can fix the issue at hand. The sink, the faucet itself is what's leaking. Like the housing, the leak is coming from inside the housing.
The leak is coming from inside the house.
So I think I've even got a chance of fixing this on my own, which I'm gonna do.
It could still go sideways on you.
Yes, I'm doubling down and opening myself up to complete and colossal failure. But I think I can turn last night a win.
A Chinese teenager who already holds 2 Guinness World Records broke 2 more by solving Rubik's Cubes in unusual ways. That's right, cubes, plural.
Go on.
Is it about my cube?
Xiamen resident Kei Junyu was observed by a Guinness adjudicator. That's a cool thing to have in a business card, isn't it? I am a Guinness adjudicator. I adjudicate. He solved 3 Rubik's cubes simultaneously.
Okay. Foot? They're using a foot?
1 in each hand.
Come on, seriously?
And 1 with his feet in 1 minute 36.39 seconds.
How is the foot cube even arranged? It can't be on a table. How would you have the dexterity for that?
I'm just telling you. There's a Guinness adjudicator there. He then suspended himself from a bar and broke the record for fastest time to solve a Rubik's Cube upside down, finishing in a time of 15.84 seconds, 1.6 seconds faster than the previous record holder. He previously had broken Guinness World Records for the fastest time to solve 3 Rubik's Cubes while juggling.
No, what?
And the fastest time to solve a Rubik's Cube by a team of 2. And he says, for beginners, it may look difficult to achieve these records. At first, I solved the cubes by using the formulas. After a million times of practice, I was familiar with all the logic of the formulas, and then I upgrade them to my own way. So he has a proprietary solving formula.
Kid's going to be like in an MLB front office tomorrow.
Or he's a complete idiot, and he just happens to be good at this.
You think he's just a savant? He's got one area of expertise?
And all you do is set Guinness records, and nobody's going to pay you for it.
Did you know that today is a national holiday?
No.
Yeah, apparently, and this
is
will...
it breakfast fish day?
No, it's not. It was for us, though, and I appreciate breakfast fish. That's one of my little perks of life. No, today is National Fast Food Day.
Yeah.
Wait, isn't every day in America kind
in
of National Fast Food Day? Friday, November 16th is National Fast Food Day. It is too close to Thanksgiving for this. Although, isn't there science behind stretching out the stomach before a large meal as opposed to fasting? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Just like stretch out the stomach and then like the last 12 hours before the big meal, you're supposed to let it shrink back up or something?
No.
Okay.
Go 12 hours without eating?
Of all the things, of all the things you know about, having
Ask
nothing
them.
On
the
that.
The other side of the glass is
Fellas,
for that.
Any science on that?
Seems
Have you read anything about
legit.
That? Seems legit. You can get free food in different places. Burger King has a bunch of deals. Pizza Hut has a bunch of deals, I guess. Jack in the Box, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, they're all offering free food here on National Fast Food Day. You're welcome, I guess, for the public service announcement. If you weren't planning on getting fast food already, and likelihood is that you were because you're an American listening to this and we eat fast food, I've just got you and saved you, I don't know, $8 on a burger or something. National Fast Food Day.
Favorite fast food item?
Whoa.
It's either
single fast, like one item?
Yeah, like let's say not a side, but like
okay,
a,
so I would
main...
say it has to be McDonald's fries. If it's
pick the sandwich then.
For me,
the entree fast food
quarter pounder with cheese.
Quarter pounder with cheese. Mine might have to be the animal style from In-N-Out.
Mine is the spicy chicken sandwich from Culver's. Extremely underrated. Better than, I know it's blasphemous, better than the Wendy's
How
one.
Dare you,
I would go, if I'm looking for underrated or value over replacement or...
Always want a Vorp.
Yeah, the one that I think is better than the sum of its parts and for a fast food item, always consistently better than I remembered it the last time, if they still make it, Hardee's/Carl's Jr. Sourdough grilled chicken.
No kidding.
Phenomenal.
I was out of the room. Is the conversation consequence-free favorite fast food items?
No, just single best fast food item.
Long John Silver's. That's it.
What?
Anything.
Really?
Yeah. Just the most fried you can make something.
But how can something be more fried than somewhere else?
I don't know, but
this fry goes to 11.
They fry it 7 times. Then they dip it in more batter and fry it again. Then they wrap it in French fries. You can literally order at Long John Silver's a bowl of fried pieces that have fallen off. They call them crispies.
You can order the cracklings.
Ooh,
it's the hardened debris. Batter. It's debris that you can order. Extra crumbs, please.
At Mother's in New Orleans, if you order debris, it's as they cook their roast beefs. They drag a slotted spoon through the drip pan and then give you that in a bowl as a breakfast side.
Do they smother it in gravy?
No, you smother it in egg yolk. You get your sunny side up eggs, then you put the egg yolks in the debris.
Oh man, I mean that's. I had no idea you could get just fried.
They really? It's on the menu?
Extra.
I don't know if it's a menu item. It's a secret menu item. I think they just actually chip it off the side of the fryer.
But who knows what's in there? There could be like...
They do it just to get Jay to go away.
Seriously, that's like doing... What do they call the shot? It's like a bar shot or a mat shot at the bar where people like they pour whatever fell into the mat. I mean, seriously, it could fall into a fryer. There could be bits of fingernail and boogers in there.
Yeah,
and
it all tastes the same.
Yeah, if it's fried, I'm down.
It's a county fair and a cup.
I see now why you came in with consequence free.
And we'll close with this thought from Glenn, who says the one interesting thing about Roy Clark is that he kind of looks like Yitzhak Perlman. Okay, I'll grant you that. That is not a sentence I expected to say today.
I don't think at the funeral that's what they came up with. No.
That's the first thought. By the way, anybody really ever notice?
Here's Roy's best friend, Phil. Phil, your thoughts. Well,
yeah, you know,
Roy kind of looked like it's Zach Perlman. Everyone nods in agreement.
Yes.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he really did. Phil knows Roy.
He kind of did. So there's a story I wanted to get to, too. Did you know that the Maryland football program and ousted coach DJ Durkin, in ways we never understood, the gift that keeps on giving, it was even worse than we thought near the end.
Perfect. More nonsense from Maryland.
And other coaching things we got to get to.
Yeah, there are other coaching things. And I've just been handed a story as well that is worth reading for the headline alone. Wow, stuff to get to here.
Reading is good.
Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves are at home Saturday night against Iowa, Sunday afternoon versus Manitoba. Saturday's Koozie Night, courtesy of Sport Clips, and Sunday, kids receive an admission pass to Legoland Discover Center. Visit chicagowolves.com. So... we have some coachy things we have to get to here. There's an NFL coach in the news, and this is from the Baltimore Sun. Former University of Maryland football coach DJ Durkin continued to communicate with assistant coaches and develop game plans for his team after being placed on administrative leave.
Seems that runs counter to the idea of administrative leave.
You'd think. The sources said Durkin told a task force that assistant coaches sent him game film to review so that he could help with game plans, and his continuing role was shared with and discussed by the State University System's Board of Regents. Whether university officials approved Durkin's involvement while he was on leave is in dispute. Durkin told the Regents his activity was approved by athletic director Damon Evans, two sources said. And Durkin told the task force he was responding to requests from advice for the assistants, and the university had not limited such contact. But in a statement late Wednesday, a spokesman said Durkin was not to perform coaching duties while on an administrative leave.
Good God.
I mean, seriously.
That place is all kinds of messed up.
And it reminds me of one of the funniest moments I've ever been a part of. And it was in the Wild West that was the Global Basketball Association when our coach Monty Tau got kicked out of a game. I even remember the referees. The referee's got him Charles Stamper, and he and Monty had a thing to the point where like they almost fought after a game one time, and then soon after the game started, the guy just threw him out. So he left the premises, kinda. He went outside. this is our coach. We didn't have an assistant coach. It's the start of the game. So he goes outside.
Is the start of the game?
Yeah. He goes outside and he stands on a scaffold. And I put this together over the course of the game as I'm doing play-by-play. I'm sitting right next to the bench. And during every timeout, well, first of all, there's a pile of white towels right in front of our trainer, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Chicago guy. His name is actually Bill Murray.
How big a pile? A sizable?
A little pile of white towels. And I noticed that at every timeout, Bill is kind of leaning down toward the pile of white towels.
Oh, God.
Okay, under the towel was a walkie-talkie that we'd gotten from the maintenance people, apparently. I don't know. And Monty's outside, literally outside of the arena, on a platform, looking through a window with the other walkie-talkie, calling plays, telling the trainer what to signal. And then during timeouts, all the players are gathered around and leaning their heads down toward the pile of towels. So I actually saw a professional basketball game coached by a talking pile of towels.
Oh, pile of towels, yes. Tell us how to defend this fast break.
Please, please divulge your wisdom, oh wise pile of towels.
Follow the towels. No, the gourd! Follow the gourd!
You can't make up stuff like that. And as the team broadcaster and public relations director, I'm not going to say it on the air. I'm not going to broadcast, by the way, something fishy is going on over here. So I just said, remarkably, the Raleigh Bullfrogs are holding it together and running just the right side out of bounds playing with the personnel.
Isn't that the kind of coach you have to have in the Global Basketball Association, which lasted for 3 years and included a team from apparently Kalev in the Soviet Union?
No, it did. They wanted to, but they didn't.
They tried.
They tried. It didn't get off the ground. That was the irony of the Global Basketball Association, is most of the teams were in the southeast of the United States.
Albany, Cedar Rapids, Fayetteville.
Albany, Georgia.
Greensboro. Yeah, Huntsville, Kalev.
No.
Louisville, Memphis, Mid-Michigan. Where were the Mid-Michigan Great Lakers
based? The Mid-Michigan Great Lakers were based out of Saginaw, and their mascot was Sammy the Slammin' Salmon.
Mississippi Coast Sharks?
They didn't exist. They
never made it. Also, wanted to.
Also didn't get off the ground.
Couldn't find the right pile of towels to get them through a season.
The problem was that the Memphis Hotshots became the Pensacola Hotshots, and they didn't tell us until we got to Memphis.
The San Marino Italy team, which could not have existed because they didn't have a mascot.
No, we got to Memphis, and they said the team moved to Pensacola. I said, yeah, but they didn't tell us.
Time's game time.
You better go to Pensacola because the game's tonight. They had white tape over their Pensacola warm-ups, and they wrote in Pensacola.
You know, at times I'm glad that the Carolina League that I worked in for a season was as organized as it was, but at other times I wish we had some of the crazy nonsensical stories of showing up to a city that didn't have a team
anymore. It was great. And then when we showed up in Pensacola, we finally got there, and I got to the hotel bar where we're staying, and the coach of the other team is in there and he's drunk.
Coach, game time is in 6 hours. Yes. Don't worry, the pile of towels is going to do the work tonight.
That was their coach. He was hammered. He's at the end of the bar. I'm like, wait, coach? It was Dana Kirk, the former Memphis State coach who resigned under a cloud of scandal. And that he was
mist of alcohol, apparently.
He was sitting back in his cloud of scandal at the end of the bar. And then I think he's dead. But God, can he tell a story? He was really...
Sit there with him for a while.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? Give him that opportunity?
Guys, old salty bastards can always
best.
Tell stories.
Now, speaking of bastards, here's another coaching...
Old and salty? That's how I like my bastards.
No, young and fat. This... How do you like your bastards?
Old, salty.
Get the Crispins for you, or the Crispies, whatever they call them.
Side of gravy.
This is from Pro Football Talk. Lions coach Matt Patricia has taken some shots over the last 24 hours.
He's actually taken shots.
He's doing shots. He and Dana Kirk are at
the bar
together.
Way to get through the season.
He had his team practice outdoors in the snow and cold yesterday, even though Detroit's next four games are in domes.
Not his next game. The next four games.
The next four games are indoors, and today Patricia shut back. He began his press conference with a prepared statement about why he decided to have his team practice outdoors on a cold, snowy day.
A prepared statement?
Stating that he thinks players benefit from having to focus on their footwork. Mud, snow, loose grass, whatever the case may be. Squirrels, chipmunks, elves. He says it focuses most of the skill players to keep their feet underneath them and play technically sound. Patricia clearly did not appreciate members of the media questioning his practice habits. He made a snarky reference to all the head coaches in the room, implying that reporters think they can coach a team better than he can. And he made it clear he doesn't appreciate addressing questions about his decisions about the Lions' practices. There's no more discussion and no more conversation about it. I'd like to move on, Patricia said.
He might be right. I have no idea. Uh-huh. I would assume that an NFL team has done some study on, what was it, skill position players keeping their legs underneath of them, you know, as opposed to splaying them out to the side while they're running or something. How much more crap can that guy step in? I mean, he's finding it on his own. That's the thing about whether it's Applewhite in Houston, mm-hmm. or whether it's... Coaches, more often than not, when they get to situations like this, have stepped in it because they put it in front of them.
Yep.
Do you figure he lasts?
He's not going to last without getting a little thicker skin about criticism, right?
He already got a little thicker.
No, it's not his. Right. It's the skin.
Added a couple of C's.
For Jay. Maybe, I don't know if he's Jay's type.
It's appealing to Jay.
I don't know if Adam.
Is that Bears last? Thanksgiving. Jay's on Thanksgiving going to be cooking and all kind of swooning about Matt Patricia. It's his kind of guy.
This week we had conversations with several people who know a lot about the Minnesota Vikings. And Sage Rosenfels was one of them.
Arif Hassan killed it.
And Arif Hassan was great. What we've done, we've put together some of the best of both of those guys from The Athletic Minnesota to tell us about the Bears' upcoming opponent. Added to that, Paul Charchin yesterday, another Minneapolis guy who, among the fantasy football discussion that they have every Thursday afternoon with McNeil and Parkins, gave us some really good stuff, just straight up football stuff about what's going on with the Vikings. So Arif Hassan, Sage Rosenfels, Paul Charchin, and all Vikings experts, and we put together an amalgamation of the best stuff they said. You're not going to want to miss this. Coming up next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Obviously, everybody knows about their receivers. They're really good, and they got a good tight end that's really good also, and he's good all over the field, especially in the red zone. They got two really good backs, and everybody knows about the quarterback. So, you know, they're a well-balanced offense.
It's that well-balanced offense that Vic Fangio will be charged with reining in, or Khalil Mack will be simply sent to destroy.
Just go eat Kirk Cousins. Thanks, Khalil.
And all week, we have had Vikings experts on to let you know what they think could play out on Sunday night. It was going to be afternoon, but now it is night for everyone to see. One of those was Sage Rosenfels of The Athletic Minnesota and of the Bernstein and McKnight Show, and he went in at length of where he thinks the Vikings have had some issues.
Where they have struggled, and they struggled earlier in the year, they were getting pushed around up front in the running game. And so teams are getting in second and threes and second and fours. And that was the difference than last year. You know, Sheldon Richardson, the new D tackle for them, he's more of a pass rusher than one of those stout run blockers. And so they're getting pushed around a little bit. And then other teams, you know, they could run or they could pass. They could do whatever they wanted on second down. In the last couple of games, they have been much better against the run, holding teams to, you know, second eights and second and sevens, and that's created sort of an advantageous spot for them defensively. Now, what concerns me about the Bears against the Vikings defense is the Bears have really fast, quick guys. That's their style of receivers. And you know, Cohen and Gabriel and Miller, by the way, who is coming along. I mean, this kid's going to be a stud. I'm sure Bears fans are starting to love him. But those guys are smaller and fast and quick. Another Vikings opponent this year, the LA Rams, had three guys that were small, fast, and quick, and they decimated the Vikings defense in man-to-man coverage. You know, Xavier Rhodes is a very good DB, but he likes big physical play. Mm-hmm. Those small guys like Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods in LA, he could not get his hands on them, and they could run right past him. Mm-hmm. So I would be very concerned as the Vikings defensive coordinator and Mike Zimmer, the head coach, about, you know, they play a lot of man-to-man, but do you want to play man-to-man against this style of offense because these receivers and backs are so quick?
The other thing that man-to-man does is that creates scrambling opportunities for Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, I think you end up with a double-edged sword there. Unless you have a spy on him, he's going to read names on jerseys and maybe grab 8, 9, 10, 14 yards a chunk.
Yeah, they have been playing more zone defense as of late. And, that's been sort of a changeup for them over the past. What you'll see is, as Bears fans, you'll see a lot of this double-A gap blitz. They actually have two guys in the A gap, and then you have Harrison Smith and another linebacker on the edges and sort of the D gaps. And, you know, there's really eight guys up, and you don't know which guys are going to come. And they usually game plan really well for that and also still have guys trapping for what it would be your hot throw. And so you'll see plenty of that in this game. You're probably trying to confuse Trubisky a little bit. But I know this. I know that the Vikings are going to be really concerned about all these quick passes and trying to tackle. So my guess is that they're going to play more zone coverage. What we call a quarter half, which is sort of cover four on one side and then, you know, cover two on the other side. Or just some sort of straight cover two and keep the ball in front of them. The Bears had a lot of big plays in that last game. And this year they make a lot of big plays. My question is maybe Mike Zimmer will wonder if they can force Trubisky to have, you know, 13, 14 to 15 play drives, make him really earn it down the field if he can do that without making some sort of mistake.
Sage, what has this season arc looked like from your perspective on Kirk Cousins?
Well, see, Kirk is an interesting, you know, guy because he puts up these stats that you look at. And I think he's like, you know, sixth in the NFL or something and stats or seventh as a quarterback. And but then if you ask a Vikings fan, you're like, well, he's played really well in some games and not so well in some mm-hmm. other games and, you know, sort of up and down. You know, what he does is his biggest flaw is that he takes a problem, you know, a left tackle misses a block or somebody runs a crappy route. He takes that problem and many times makes it worse. And that's an issue with a quarterback. You don't want to compound a problem with a bigger problem. And he does that. You know, he'll get pressure. He'll try to make a play and throw the ball somewhere and end up getting intercepted because he's got no juice on it, or he tries to step up in the pocket rather than just securing the ball and ends up being knocked out in the fumble in return for touchdown, which happened versus the Cardinals earlier this year. So he seems to compound a problem with another problem. If he can stay away from those, he has got a huge arm. He's extremely accurate. He's so good throwing to Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. He's got great rapport with those guys. That is what his strength is. They don't have a complex offense. You will not see anything like what the Bears run on offense. It's much more traditional, much more quarterback under center, straight drop back pass, a little play action, some bootlegs, but not, you know, they deal with a few wide receiver screens, but nothing like all the stuff that the Bears are doing.
Pretty complete stuff from the former NFL coach on that. It's a strong statement about sort of how we feel watching Kirk Cousins play.
Yeah, he's got the weapons to be very dangerous, but like I said earlier this morning, I don't necessarily fear the amalgamation of stats that Kirk Cousins has put together. I fear Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen be able to get up the field and do what they do against a couple of cornerbacks and Fuller and Callahan that might otherwise, you know, they might struggle.
On the other side of things, the Athletic's Arif Hassan says that if we really look at history, it's likely that this talented Vikings defense is going to be tough on a young quarterback like Mitchell Trubisky.
He's done a lot better against young quarterbacks than I think a lot of defensive coordinators have done against young quarterbacks. I mean, you know, in Carson Wentz's, you know, first 2 years, they did a pretty good job containing him. Jared Goff in his second year, they did a good job containing him. So those first second years, teams seem to have difficulty with their young quarterbacks going up against a defensive coordinator like Zimmer. And I think a lot of it has to do with those disguised coverages you mentioned, a lot of trap coverages, making quarterbacks kind of not confident in trusting their eyes. And so, you know, what might look like kind of a zone defense, it turns out it's a man defense. Or, hey, you know, you spotted zone, but it's actually only zone on one side. It's actually man on the other side. That kind of stuff confuses a lot of young quarterbacks, and he does a really good job kind of taking advantage of it.
Maybe it's just circumstance, but I find it interesting that the Bears will go against a head coach with a defensive background against the Vikings. And we've talked a lot about how the new head coaches are almost, I shouldn't say exclusively, but the trend has been to hire the young offensive guy. There's a lot of reasons for that. The
offense
bond
is
with
more
the quarterback.
Important is why.
If you have if your head coach is the defensive coordinator, or you know, the defensive guru, then your offensive coordinator who's working with your quarterback is just going to leave for the next head coaching job. If he has the head coaching job, he's likely to stay, and that's more stability, and we all know what's important in this league. That said, look at the schedule for the Bears the last handful of weeks. You face the Patriots, and granted, Bill Belichick is, you know, he's all ahead, but he came up a defensive guy. Todd Bowles of the Jets, a defensive guy. Matt Patricia of the Lions, a defensive guy. Zimmer of the Vikings, a defensive guy. They'll get the Lions again, defensive guy. And then they get the Giants, which is just a giant train wreck anyway. It's kind of interesting that the wins and the schedule the last few weeks have all been against mostly defensive guys. I don't know where you do, you know, McDermott, where you put him of the Bills on that spectrum. I don't know. And he's got such a bad team offensively. I don't know that it mattered.
Paul Charchian sees a lot of Vikings football. He joins us on Tuesdays to do fantasy waiver wire stuff. He is on Thursday afternoons with McNeil and Parkins for roster questions. But he knows football as well as fantasy football. And he gave us a place to look for the difference in Sunday's game.
Tell me how many quarterback pressures there are in this game, and I'll tell you who wins. I think that's the single biggest X factor. Kirk has been under duress all season long. He's the most hurried passer in the NFL. But to his credit, he's been able to be very effective anyway. And it doesn't always mean sacks and hurries doesn't always mean that he can't end up finding his receivers. Obviously, Diggs and Thielen have been great this year. But that's the biggest single advantage that the Bears have, for sure, is line of scrimmage. It's a very thin Vikings offensive line. But they get Riley Reiff back. He's their best player. He's their left tackle. That's very important. They get their left guard back, Tom Compton, likely to play as well. So as healthy as this line can ever be, at least they've got that going.
Not fantasy-wise, because Kirk Cousins is an amazing statistical quarterback, but I find him to be a very tough scout. Is it the system and the coaching and the skill position guys, or is he actually really good? What do you think?
He's freaking awesome. Cousins is so good. His whole game, you know, his whole game has elevated this year from anything it was with the Redskins. The only real ding on Cousins is about once a game, he makes a dumb play, and he can torpedo the whole team out of that play. That's how they lost to the Bills earlier in the year, and they lost to the Saints. They had the Saints. They were manhandling the Saints until he threw just an unforgivable pick six the other way. If you can get past this one or maybe two bad plays in every game, dude is just a baller with a fantastic arm, and he reads the field brilliantly. And you look at what he's done, how he has elevated Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs from sort of B-plus players into A-plus players. It's all because of Kirk Cousins.
It's a lot of love for Kirk Cousins.
I was surprised to hear it. I was surprised to hear it. We don't usually hear him gush like that. But
I think in terms of a quarterback, you're always going to throw a little bit more credit at them when an offensive line is deteriorating around them and they still make good plays.
That was a lot of the Aaron Rodgers stuff.
That's exactly how I feel about watching Aaron Rodgers every year for the past five. You know,
Rick Camp and I were joking before the show. You know how hurt the offensive line is for the Packers when they actually have a non-white person out there. We spotted the right guard. A person of color was on the Packers offensive line. That's how decimated they are.
A kid that didn't go to Iowa or Wisconsin.
I guess we got to do it. I guess finally the injuries have gotten to us. We got to put somebody out there.
Aaron, drafted one guy in the first round a few years ago. He didn't pan out. That means, you know what? Go back to what you know.
Mark Tauscher, come on out. I guess the question that's kind of in the back of my mind about this Bears-Vikings game, a question that we'll ask Patrick Manley in just a few minutes, because he joins us every Friday to break down the Bears opponent, is do you want to win a shootout?
I want to win anything I can win.
You want to win a shootout. I mean, do the Bears want to go win a shootout? Because I think it's going to be tougher for them to turn over Kirk Cousins than perhaps Sage said. And I think I lean a little bit more toward Paul Charchian in his assessment of the Vikings offense at this point.
Khalil Mack's a potential strip sack on every play.
That offensive line for the Vikings is pretty bad. How bad? to ask Patrick Manley when we come back. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.